Chapter 26 Discord. Rand darted through the common room of the Defender of the Dragon Wall and hurried upstairs, grinning at the startled look the innkeeper had given him. Rand wanted to grin at everything. Tom's alive. He flung open the door to his room and went straight to the wardrobe. Loyal and Huron put their heads in from the other room, both in their shirt sleeves and with pipes in their teeth trailing thin streams of smoke.
"Has something happened, Lord Rand?" Huron asked anxiously.
Rand slung the bundle made from Tom's cloak on his shoulder.
"The best that could. Next to Ingtar coming. Tom Marilyn's alive, and he's here in Kyrian."
"The Gleeman you told me about?"
Loyal said.
"That is wonderful, Rand. I would like to meet him."
"Then come with me, if Huron's willing to keep watch a while." "It would be a pleasure, Lord Rand."
Huron took the pipe out of his mouth.
"That lot in the common room kept trying to pump me, without letting on what they were doing, of course, about who you are, my lord, and why we're in Kyrian. I told them we were waiting here to meet friends, but being Kyrianan, they figured I was hiding something deeper. Let them think what they want. Come on, Loyal."
"I think not," the Ogier sighed. "I really would rather stay here."
He raised a book with a thick finger marking his place.
"I can meet Tom Marilyn some other time."
"Loyal, you can't stay cooped up in here forever. We do not even know how long we'll be in Kyrian. Anyway, we didn't see any Ogier, and if we do, they would not be hunting for you, would they?"
"Not hunting, precisely, but... Rand, I may have been too hasty in leaving Steading Shangtai the way I did. When I do go home, I may be in a great deal of trouble."
His ears wilted.
"Even if I wait until I'm as old as Elder Haman, perhaps I could find an abandoned steading to stay in until then."
"If Elder Haman won't let you come back, you can live in Emmons Field. It's a pretty place."
"A beautiful place."
"I am sure it is, Rand, but that would never work. You see..."
"We will talk about it when it comes to that, Loyal. Now you are coming to see Tom."
The Ogier stood half again as tall as Rand, but Rand pushed him into his long tunic and cloak and down the stairs. When they came pounding through the common room, Rand winked at the innkeeper, then laughed at his startled look.
"Let him think I'm off to play his bloody great game. Let him think what he wants. Tom's alive."
Once through the Jangai Gate in the east wall of the city, everyone seemed to know the bunch of grapes. Rand and Loyal quickly found themselves there, on a street that was quiet for the foregate, with the sun halfway down the afternoon sky. It was an old three-story structure, wooden and rickety, but the common room was clean and full of people. Some men were playing at dice in one corner, and some women at darts in another. Half had the look of Kyrianan, slight and pale, but Rand heard Andoran accents, as well as others he did not know. All wore the clothes of the foregate, though, a blend of the styles of half a dozen countries. A few looked around when he and Loyal came in, but they all turned back to what they had been doing. The innkeeper was a woman with hair as white as Tom's and sharp eyes that studied Loyal as well as Rand. She was not Kyrianan by her dark skin and her speech.
"Tom Marilyn, aye, he has a room. Top of the stairs, first door on the right. Likely Dina will let you wait for him there."
She eyed Rand's red coat with its herons on the high collar and golden brambles embroidered up the sleeves and his sword.
"My lord."
The stairs creaked under Rand's boots, let alone Loyal's. Rand was not sure if the building would stand up much longer. He found the door and knocked, wondering who Dina was.
"Come in,"
a woman's voice called.
"I cannot open it for you."
Rand opened the door hesitantly and put his head in. A big, rumpled bed was shoved against one wall, and the rest of the room was all but taken up by a pair of wardrobes, several brass-bound trunks and chests, a table and two wooden chairs. The slender woman, sitting cross-legged on the bed with her skirts tucked under her, was keeping six colored balls spinning in a wheel between her hands.
"Whatever it is," she said, looking at her juggling, "leave it on the table. Tom will pay you when he comes back."
"Are you Dina?" Rand asked.
She snatched the balls out of the air and turned to regard him. She was only a handful of years older than he, pretty and with fair Kyrianan skin, and dark hair hanging loose to her shoulders.
I do not know you. This is my room, mine and Tom Marilyn's.
The innkeeper said you might let us wait here for Tom, Rand said, if you're Dina.
Us?
Rand moved into the room, so Loyal could duck inside, and the young woman's eyebrows lifted.
So the Ogier have come back. I am, Dina. What do you want?
She looked at Rand's coat so deliberately that the failure to add, my lord, had to be purposeful, though her brows went up again at the herons on his scabbard and sword hilt. Rand hefted the bundle he carried.
I've brought Tom back his harp and his flute. And I want to visit with him, he added quickly.
She seemed on the point of telling him to leave them.
I haven't seen him in a long time.
She eyed the bundle.
Tom always moans about losing the best flute and the best harp he ever had. You would think he was a court bard the way he carries on. Very well. You can wait, but I must practice. Tom says he will let me perform in the halls next week.
She rose gracefully and took one of the two chairs, motioning Loyal to sit on the bed.
Zara would make Tom pay for 6 chairs if you broke one of these, friend Ogier.
Rand gave their names as they sat in the other chair. It creaked alarmingly under even his weight, and asked doubtfully,
Are you Tom's apprentice?
Dina gave a small smile.
You might say that.
She had resumed her juggling, and her eyes were on the whirling balls.
I have never heard of a woman gleeman, Loyal said.
I will be the first.
The one big circle became 2 smaller overlapping circles.
I will see the whole world before I am done. Tom says once we have enough money, we will go down to Tyr.
She switched to juggling 3 balls in each hand.
And then maybe out to the Sea Folk's Islands. The Athan Mier paid gleeman well.
Rand eyed the room, with all the chests and trunks. It did not look like the room of someone intending to move on soon. There was even a flower growing in a pot on the windowsill. His gaze fell on the single big bed where Loyal was sitting.
This is my room. Mine and Tom Marilyn's.
Dina gave him a challenging look through the large wheel she had resumed. Rand's face reddened. He cleared his throat.
Maybe we ought to wait downstairs, he began when the door opened, and Tom came in with his cloak flapping around his ankles, patches fluttering.
Cased flute and harp hung on his back. The cases were reddish wood, polished by handling. Dina made the balls disappear inside her dress and ran to throw her arms around Tom's neck, standing a tiptoe to do it.
I missed you, she said, and kissed him.
The kiss went on for some time, so long that Rand was beginning to wonder if he and Loyal should leave, but Dina let her heels drop to the floor with a sigh.
Do you know what that lackwit Schoffen's done now, girl?
Tom said, looking down at her.
He's taken on a pack of louts who call themselves players. They walk around pretending to be Rogash Eagle Eye, and Blaze, and Gaidal Kane, and... They hang a scrap of painted canvas behind them, supposed to make the audience believe these fools are in Matuchin Hall, or the high passes in the Mountains of Doom. I make the listener see every banner, smell every battle, feel every emotion. I make them believe they are Gaidal Kane. Schoffen will have his hall torn down around his ears if he puts this lot on to follow me.
Tom, we have visitors. Loyal, son of Arendt, son of Holland. Oh, and a boy who calls himself Randall Thor.
Tom looked over her head at Rand, frowning.
Leave us for a while, Dina. Here.
He pressed some silver coins into her hand.
Your knives are ready. Why don't you go pay Ivan for them?
He brushed her smooth cheek with a gnarled knuckle.
Go on. I'll make it up to you.
She gave him a dark look, but she tossed her cloak around her shoulders, muttering,
Ivan better have the balance right.
She'll be a bard one day, Tom said with a note of pride after she was gone. She listens to a tale once, once only, mind, and she has it right. Not just the words, but every nuance, every rhythm. She has a fine hand on the harp, and she played the flute better the first time she picked it up than you ever did.
He set the wooden instrument cases atop one of the larger trunks, then dropped into the chair she had abandoned.
When I passed through Camelin on the way here, Basil Gill told me you'd left in the company with an Ogier, among others.
He bowed toward Loyal, even managing a flourish of his cloak despite the fact that he was sitting on it.
I am pleased to meet you, Loyal, son of Arendt, son of Hallen.
And I too meet you, Tom Merrillan.
Loyal stood to make his bow in return. When he straightened, his head almost brushed the ceiling, and he quickly sat down again.
The young woman said she wants to be a gleeman.
Tom's headshake was disparaging.
That's no life for a woman. Not much of a life for a man, for that. Wandering from town to town, village to village, wondering how they'll try to cheat you this time, half the time wondering where your next meal is coming from. No, I'll tuck her around. She'll be court-barred to a king or a queen before she's done. Ah, you didn't come here to talk about Dina. My instruments, boy. You've brought them?
Rand pushed the bundle across the table. Tom undid it hurriedly. He blinked when he saw it was his old cloak, all covered with colorful patches like the one he wore, and opened the hard leather flute case, nodding at the sight of the gold and silver flute nestled inside. I earned my bed and meals with that after we parted, Rand said.
I know, the gleeman replied dryly. I stopped at some of the same inns, but I had to make do with juggling and a few simple stories since you had my... You didn't touch the harp.
He pulled open the other dark leather case and took out a gold and silver harp as ornate as the flute, cradling it in his hands like a baby.
Your clumsy sheepherder's fingers were never meant for the harp.
I didn't touch it, Rand assured him. Tom plucked two strings, wincing.
At least you could have kept it in tune, he muttered.
Rand leaned across the table toward him.
Tom, you wanted to go to Ilion to see the great hunt set out, and be one of the first to make new stories about it, but you couldn't. What would you say if I told you you could still be a part of it? A big part.
Loyal stirred uneasily.
Rand, are you sure?
Rand waved him to silence, his eyes on Tom. Tom glanced at the Ogier and frowned.
That would depend on what part and how. If you've reason to believe one of the hunters is coming this way, I suppose they could have left Ilion already, but he'd be weeks reaching here if he rode straight on, and why would he? Is this one of the fellows who never went to Ilion? He'll never make it into the stories without the blessing, whatever he does.
It doesn't matter if the hunt has left Ilion or not,
Rand heard Loyal's breath catch.
Tom, we have the Horn of Valir.
For a moment, there was dead silence. Tom broke it with a great guffaw of laughter.
You too have the horn. A shepherd and a beardless Ogier have the horn of...
He doubled over, pounding his knee.
The horn of Valir. But we do have it,
Loyal said seriously. Tom drew a deep breath. Small aftershocks of laughter still seemed to catch him unaware.
I don't know what you found, but I can take you to 10 taverns where a fellow will tell you that he knows a man who knows the man who's already found the horn, and he will tell you how it was found, too, as long as you buy his ale. I can take you to 3 men who will sell you the horn and swear their souls under the light it's the real one and true. There is even a lord in the city has what he claims is the horn locked up inside his manor. He says it's a treasure handed down in his house since the breaking. I don't know if the hunters will ever find the horn, but they will hunt down 10,000 lies along the way.
Moraine says it's the horn, Rand said.
Tom's mirth was cut short.
She does she? I thought you said she was not with you.
She isn't, Tom. I have not seen her since I left Valdara in Shinar, and for a month before that, she said no more than 2 words together to me.
He could not keep the bitterness out of his voice.
And when she did talk, I wished she'd kept on ignoring me. I'll never dance to her tune again. The light burn her and every other Aes Sedai. No, not Egwene, not Nynaeve.
He was conscious of Tom watching him closely.
She isn't here, Tom. I do not know where she is, and I don't care.
Well, at least you have sense enough to keep it secret. If you hadn't, it would be all over the Foregate by now, and half of Kyrian would be lying in wait to take it away. Half the world.
Oh, we've kept it secret, Tom. And I have to bring it back to Faldara without Dark Friends or anyone else taking it away. That's story enough for you right there, isn't it? I could use a friend who knows the world. You've been everywhere. You know things I can't even imagine. Loyal and Huron know more than I do, but we're all three floundering in deep water.
Huron? No, don't tell me how. I do not want to know.
The Gleeman pushed back his chair and went to stare out of the window.
The Horn of Valir. That means the last battle is coming. Who will notice? Did you see the people laughing in the streets out there? Let the grain barges stop a week, and they won't laugh. Galdrian will think they've all become Aiel. The nobles all play the game of houses, scheming to get close to the king, scheming to gain more power than the king, scheming to pull down Galdrian and be the next king, or queen. They will think Tommen Gaiden is only a ploy in the game.
He turned away from the window.
I don't suppose you are talking about simply riding to Shinar and handing the horn to... who? The king? Why Shinar? The legends all tie the horn to Ilion.
Rand looked at Loyal. The Ogier's ears were sagging.
Shinar, because I know who to give it to there. And there are Trollocs and Dark Friends after us.
Why does that not surprise me?
No. I may be an old fool, but I will be an old fool in my own way.
You take the glory, boy.
Tom!
No!
There was a silence, broken only by the creaking of the bed as Loyal shifted. Finally, Rand said,
Loyal, would you mind leaving Tom and me alone for a bit, please?
Loyal looked surprised. The tufts on his ears went almost to points. But he nodded and rose.
That dice game in the common room looked interesting. Perhaps they will let me play.
Tom eyed Rand suspiciously as the door closed behind the Ogier. Rand hesitated. There were things he needed to know, things he was sure Tom knew. The Gleeman had once seemed to know a great deal about a surprising number of things, but he was not sure how to ask. Tom, he said at last, are there any books that have the Kariathon cycle in them? Easier to call it that than the prophecies of the dragon.
In the great libraries, Tom said slowly. Any number of translations, and even in the old tongue, here and there.
Rand started to ask if there was any way for him to find one, but the Gleeman went on.
The old tongue has music in it, too, but too many, even of the nobles, are impatient with listening to it these days. Nobles are all expected to know the old tongue, but many only learn enough to impress people who don't. Translations don't have the same sound unless they're in high chant, and sometimes that changes meanings even more than most translations. There is one verse in the cycle. It doesn't scan well, translated word for word, but there's no meaning lost. That goes like this. Twice and twice shall he be marked, twice to live and twice to die. Once the heron to set his path, twice the heron to name him true. Once the dragon for remembrance lost, twice the dragon for the price he must pay.
He reached out and touched the herons embroidered on Rand's high collar. For a moment, Rand could only gape at him, and when he could speak, his voice was unsteady.
The sword makes five. Hilt, scabbard, and blade.
He turned his hand down on the table, hiding the brand on his palm. For the first time since Selene's salve had done its work, he could feel it. Not hurting, but he knew it was there.
So they do, Tom barked a laugh. There's another comes to mind. Twice dawns the day when his blood is shed. Once for morning, once for birth. Red on black, the dragon's blood stains the rock of Sheol Ghul. In the pit of doom shall his blood free men from the shadow.
Rand shook his head, denying, but Tom seemed not to notice.
I don't see how a day can dawn twice, but then a lot of it doesn't really make much sense. The Stone of Tyr will never fall till Kalandor is wielded by the dragon reborn, but the sword that cannot be touched lies in the heart of the stone. So how can he wield it first, eh? Well, be that as it may, I suspect Aes Sedai would want to make events fit the prophecies as closely as they can. Dying somewhere in the blasted lands would be a high price to pay for going along with them. It was an effort for Rand to make his voice calm, but he did it. No Aes Sedai are using me for anything. I told you the last I saw of Moraine was in Shinar. She said I could go where I wanted, and I left.
And there's no Aes Sedai with you now? None at all?
None. Tom knuckled his dangling white mustaches. He seemed satisfied and at the same time puzzled.
Then why ask about the prophecies? Why send the Ogier out of the room?
I didn't want to upset him. He's nervous enough about the horn. That's what I wanted to ask. Is the horn mentioned in the prophecies?
He still could not make himself say it all the way out.
All these false dragons, and now the horn is found. Everybody thinks the Horn of Valir is supposed to summon dead heroes to fight the Dark One in the last battle, and the Dragon Reborn is supposed to fight the Dark One in the last battle. It seemed natural enough to ask.
I suppose it is. Not many know that about the Dragon Reborn fighting the last battle, or if they do, they think he'll fight alongside the Dark One. Not many read the prophecies to find out. What was that you said about the horn? Supposed to?
I've learned a few things since we parted, Tom. They will come for whoever blows the horn, even a dark friend.
Bushy eyebrows rose nearly to Tom's hairline.
Now that I didn't know. You have learned a few things.
It doesn't mean I would let the White Tower use me for a false dragon. I don't want anything to do with Aes Sedai, or false dragons, or the power, or...
Rand bit his tongue. Get mad, and you start babbling, fool.
For a time, boy, I thought you were the one Moraine wanted, and I even thought I knew why. You know, no man chooses to channel the power. It is something that happens to him like a disease. You cannot blame a man for falling sick, even if it might kill you, too.
Your nephew could channel, couldn't he? You told me that was why you helped us. Because your nephew had had trouble with the White Tower, and there was nobody to help him. There's only one kind of trouble men can have with Aes Sedai.
Tom studied the tabletop, pursing his lips.
I don't suppose there is any use in denying it. You understand, it is not the kind of thing a man talks about, having a male relative who could channel. Ah, the Red Aja never gave Owen a chance. They gentled him, and then he died. He just gave up wanting to live.
He exhaled sadly.
Rand shivered. Why didn't Moraine do that to me? A chance, Tom. Do you mean there was some way he could have dealt with it? Not gone mad? Not died?
Owen held it off almost 3 years. He never hurt anyone. He didn't use the power unless he had to. And then only to help his village.
Tom threw up his hands.
I suppose there was no choice. The people where he lived told me he was acting strange that whole last year. They did not much want to talk about it, and they nearly stoned me when they found out I was his uncle. I suppose he was going mad. But he was my blood boy. I can't love the Aes Sedai for what they did to him, even if they had to. If Moraine's let you go, then you are well out of it.
For a moment, Rand was silent.
Fool? Of course there's no way to deal with it. You're going to go mad and die whatever you do. But Baalazamon said, no.
He colored under Tom's scrutiny.
I mean, I am out of it, Tom. But I still have the Horn of Valir. Think of it, Tom. The Horn of Valir. Other Gleemen might tell tales about it, but you could say you had it in your hands.
He realized he sounded like Celine, but all that did was make him wonder where she was.
There's nobody I'd rather have with us than you, Tom.
Tom frowned as if considering it. But in the end, he shook his head firmly.
Boy, I like you well enough. But you know as well as I do that I only helped before because there was an Aes Sedai mixed in it. Shoffen doesn't try to cheat me more than I expect, and with the king's gift added in, I could never earn as much in the villages. To my very great surprise, Dina seems to love me, and, as much a surprise, I return the feeling. Now why should I leave that to go be chased by Trollocs and Dark Friends? The Horn of Valyr? Oh, it is a temptation, I'll admit. But no. No, I will not get mixed up in it again.
He leaned over to pick up one of the wooden instrument cases, long and narrow. When he opened it, a flute lay inside, plainly made, but mounted with silver. He closed it again and slid it across the table.
You might need to earn your supper again someday, boy.
I might at that, Rand said. At least we can talk. I will be in... The gleeman was shaking his head.
A clean break is best, boy. If you're always coming around, even if you never mention it, I won't be able to get the horn out of my head. And I won't be tangled in it. I won't.
After Rand left, Tom threw his cloak on the bed and sat with his elbows on the table. The Horn of Valyr. How did that farm boy find it? He shut off that line of thought. Think about the horn too long, and he would find himself running off with Rand to carry it to Shinar. That would make a story, carrying the Horn of Valyr to the Borderlands with Trollocs and Dark Friends pursuing. Scowling, he reminded himself of Dina. Even if she had not loved him, talent such as hers was not to be found every day. And she did love, even if he could not begin to imagine why.
Old fool, he muttered.
Aye, an old fool, Zara said from the door.
He gave a start. He had been so absorbed in his thoughts that he had not heard the door open. He had known Zara for years, off and on, in his wanderings, and she always took full advantage of the friendship to speak her mind.
An old fool who's playing the game of houses again. Unless my ears are failing, that young lord has the sound of Andor on his tongue. He's no Carrienan, that's for certain sure. Deus de Mar is dangerous enough without letting an outland lord mix you in his schemes.
Tom blinked, then considered the way Rand had looked. That coat had surely been fine enough for a lord. He was growing old, letting things like that slip by him. Ruefully, he realized he was considering whether to tell Zara the truth or let her continue thinking as she did. All it takes is to think about the great game and I start playing it.
The boy is a shepherd, Zara, from the Two Rivers.
She laughed scornfully.
And I'm the queen of Giladan. I tell you, the game has grown dangerous in Kyrie in the last few years. Nothing like what you knew in Camelon. There are murders done now. You'll have your throat cut for you if you don't watch out.
I tell you, I am not in the great game any longer. That's all 20 years in the past, near enough.
Aye.
She did not sound as if she believed it.
But be that as it may, and young outland lords aside, you've begun performing at the lords' manors.
They pay well.
And they'll pull you into their plots as soon as they see how. They see a man and think how to use him, as naturally as breathing. This young lord of yours won't help you. They will eat him alive.
He gave up on trying to convince her. He was out of it.
Is that what you came up to say, Zara?
Aye. Forget playing the great game, Tom. Marry Dina. She'll take you, the more fool her, bony and white-haired as you are. Marry her and forget this young lord and Deus de Mar.
I thank you for the advice, he said dryly.
Marry her? Burden her with an old husband? She'll never be a bard with my past hanging around her neck.
If you don't mind, Zara, I want to be alone for a while. I perform for Lady Arlen and her guests tonight, and I need to prepare.
She gave him a snort and a shake of her head and banged the door shut behind her. Tom drummed his fingers on the table. Coat or no coat, Rand was still only a shepherd. If he had been more, if he had been what Tom once suspected, a man who could channel, Neither Moraine nor any other Aes Sedai would ever have let him walk away ungentled. Horn or no horn, the boy was only a shepherd.
"He is out of it," he said aloud. "And so am I."
Chapter 27. The Shadow in the Night.
"I do not understand it," Loyal said. "I was winning most of the time, and then Dina came in and joined the game, and she won it all right back. Every toss. She called it a little lesson. What did she mean by that?"
Rand and the Ogier were making their way through the foregate, the bunch of grapes behind them. The sun sat low in the west, a red ball half below the horizon, throwing long shadows behind them. The street was empty, save for one of the big puppets, a goat-horned trollic, with a sword at its belt, coming toward them with five men working the poles. But sounds of merriment drifted still from other parts of the foregate, where the halls of entertainment and the taverns stood. Here, doors were already barred and windows shuttered. Rand stopped fingering the wooden flute case and slung it on his back. I suppose I couldn't expect him to throw over everything and come with me, but at least he could talk to me. Light, I wish Ingtar would show up. He stuffed his hands in his pockets and felt Celine's note.
"You don't suppose she..."
Loyal paused uncomfortably.
"You don't suppose she cheated, do you? Everybody was grinning as if she were doing something clever."
Rand shrugged at his cloak. "I have to take the horn and go. If we wait for Ingtar, anything can happen. Thane will come sooner or later. I have to stay ahead of him." The men with the puppet were almost to them.
"Rand," Loyal said suddenly, "I don't think that's a..."
Abruptly, the men let their poles clatter to the packed dirt street. Instead of collapsing, the trollic leaped for Rand with outstretched hands. There was no time to think. Instinct brought the sword out of its sheath in a flashing arc. The moon rises over the lakes. The trollic staggered back with a bubbling cry, snarling even as it fell. For an instant, everyone stood frozen. Then the men, the dark friends, they had to be, looked from the trollic lying in the street to Rand with the sword in his hands and Loyal at his side. They turned and ran. Rand was staring at the trollic too. The void had surrounded him before his hand touched hilt. Sidine shone in his mind, beckoning, sickening. With an effort, he made the void vanish and licked his lips. Without the emptiness, fear crawled on his skin. "Loyal, we have to get back to the inn. Huron's alone and they..." He grunted as he was lifted into the air by a thick arm, long enough to pin both of his to his chest. A hairy hand grabbed his throat. He caught sight of a tusked snout just over his head. A rank smell filled his nose, equal parts sour sweat and pigsty. As quickly as it had seized him, the hand at his throat was torn away. Stunned, Rand stared at it, at the thick Ogier fingers clutching the trollic's wrist.
"Hold on, Rand."
Loyal's voice sounded strained. The Ogier's other hand came around and took hold of the arm still holding Rand above the ground.
"Hold on."
Rand was shaken from side to side as Ogier and Trolloc struggled. Abruptly, he fell free. Staggering, he took two steps to get clear and turned back with sword raised. Standing behind the boar-snouted Trolloc, Loyal had it by wrist and forearm, holding its arms spread wide, breathing hard with the effort. The Trolloc snarled gutturally in the harsh Trolloc tongue, throwing its head back in efforts to catch Loyal with a tusk. Their boots scuffled across the dirt of the street. Rand tried to find a place to put his blade in the trollic without hurting Loyal, but Ogier and Trollic spun in their rough dance so much that he could find no opening. With a grunt, the trollic pulled its left arm free, but before it could loose itself completely, Loyal snapped his own arm around its neck, hugging the creature close. The trollic clawed at its sword. The scythe-like blade hung on the wrong side for left-handed use, but inch by inch, the dark steel began sliding out of the scabbard. And still they thrashed about so that Rand could not strike without risking Loyal. The power. That could do it. How, he did not know, but he knew nothing else to try. The trollic had its sword half unsheathed. When the curved blade was laid bare, it would kill Loyal. Reluctantly, Rand formed the void.
Sidine shone at him, pulled at him. Dimly, he seemed to recall a time when it had sung to him, but now it only drew him. A flower's perfume drawing a bee, a midden's stench drawing a fly. He opened himself up, reached for it. There was nothing there. He could as well have been reaching for light and truth. The taint slid off onto him, soiling him, but there was no flow of light inside him. Driven by a distant desperation, he tried again and again. And again and again there was only the taint. With a sudden heave, Loyal threw the trolloc aside, so hard that the thing cartwheeled against the side of a building. It struck headfirst with a loud crack and slid down the wall to lie with its neck twisted at an impossible angle. Loyal stood staring at it, his chest heaving. Rand looked out of the emptiness for a moment before he realized what had happened. As soon as he did, though, he let void and tainted light go and hurried to Loyal's side.
I never killed before, Rand.
Loyal drew a shuddering breath. It would have killed you if you hadn't, Rand told him. Anxiously, he looked at the alleys and shuttered windows and barred doors. Where there were two trollocs, there had to be more. I'm sorry you had to do it, Loyal, but it would have killed both of us, or worse.
I know, but I cannot like it, even a trolloc.
Pointing toward the setting sun, the Ogier seized Rand's arm.
There's another of them.
Against the sun, Rand could not make out details, but it appeared to be another group of men with a huge puppet coming toward Loyal and him. Except that now he knew what to look for. The puppet moved its legs too naturally, and the snouted head rose to sniff the air without anyone lifting a pole. He did not think the Trolloc and Dark Friends could see him among the evening shadows, or what lay in the street around him. They moved too slowly for that. Yet it was plain they were hunting, and coming closer. Thane knows I am out here somewhere, he said, hastily wiping his blade on a dead Trolloc's coat. He set them to find me. He is afraid of the Trolloc's being seen, though, or he wouldn't have them disguised. If we can reach a street where there are people, we'll be safe. We have to get back to Huron. If Thane finds him, alone with the horn... He pulled Loyal along to the next corner and turned toward the nearest sounds of laughter and music. But long before they reached it, another group of men appeared ahead of them in the otherwise empty street with a puppet that was no puppet. Rand and Loyal took the next turning. It led east. Every time Rand tried to reach the music and laughter, there was a trolloc in the way, often sniffing the air for a scent. Some trollocs hunted by scent. Sometimes, here where there were no eyes to see, a trolloc stalked alone. More than once he was sure it was one he had seen before. They were closing in and making sure he and Loyal did not leave the deserted streets with their shuttered windows. Slowly the two of them were forced east, away from the city and Huron, away from other people, along narrow, slowly darkening streets that ran in all directions, uphill and down. Rand eyed the houses they passed, the tall buildings closed up tight for the night, with more than a little regret. Even if he pounded on a door until someone opened it, even if they took Loyal and him in, none of the doors he saw would stop a trolloc. All that would do would be to offer up more victims with Loyal and himself.
Rand,
Loyal said finally,
there is nowhere else to go.
They had reached the eastern edge of the foregate. The tall buildings to either side of them were the last. Lights in windows on the upper stories mocked him, but the lower floors were all shut tight. Ahead lay the hills, cloaked in first twilight and bare of so much as a farmhouse. Not entirely empty, though. He could just make out pale walls surrounding one of the larger hills, perhaps a mile away, and buildings inside.
Once they push us out there, Loyal said, they won't have to worry who sees them.
Rand gestured to the walls around the hill. Those should stop a trolloc. It must be a lord's manor. Maybe they'll let us in. An Ogier and an outland lord? This coat has to be good for something sooner or later. He looked back down the street. No trollocs in sight yet, but he drew Loyal around the side of the building anyway.
I think that is the Illuminator's chapter house, Rand. Illuminators guard their secrets tightly. I don't think they would let Galdrian himself inside there.
"What trouble have you gotten yourself into now?" said a familiar woman's voice. There was suddenly a spicy perfume in the air. Rand stared. Celine stepped around the corner they had just rounded, her white dress bright in the dimness. "How did you get here? What are you doing here? You have to leave immediately. Run! There are Trollocs after us." "So I saw." Her voice was dry, yet cool and composed. "I came to find you, and I find you allowing Trollocs to herd you like sheep. Can the man who possesses the Horn of Valir let himself be treated so?"
"I don't have it with me," he snapped, "and I don't know how it could help if I did. The dead heroes are not supposed to come back to save me from Trollocs. Celine, you have to get away, now!"
He peered around the corner. Not more than 100 paces away, a Trolloc was sticking its horned head cautiously into the street, smelling the night. A large shadow by its side had to be another Trolloc, and there were smaller shadows, too. Dark friends.
"Too late," Rand muttered.
He shifted the flute case to pull off his cloak and wrap it around her. It was long enough to hide her white dress entirely and trail on the ground besides.
"You'll have to hold that up to run," he told her. "Loyal, if they won't let us in, we'll have to find a way to sneak in."
"But Rand..."
"Would you rather wait for the Trollocs?"
He gave Loyal a push to start him and took Celine's hand to follow at a trot.
"Find us a path that won't break our necks, Loyal."
"You're letting yourself become flustered," Celine said. She seemed to be having less trouble following Loyal in the failing light than Rand did.
"Seek the oneness and be calm. One who would be great must always be calm."
"The Trollocs might hear you," he told her. "I don't want greatness."
He thought he heard an irritated grunt from her. Stones sometimes turned underfoot, but the way across the hills was not hard despite the twilight shadows. Trees and even brush had long since been cleared from the hills for firewood. Nothing grew except knee-high grass that rustled softly around their legs. A night breeze came up softly. Rand worried that it might carry their scent to the Trollocs. Loyal stopped when they reached the wall. It stood twice as high as the Ogier, the stones covered with a whitish plaster. Rand peered back toward the foregate. Bands of lighted windows reached out like spokes of a wheel from the city walls.
"Loyal," he said softly, "can you see them? Are they following us?"
The Ogier looked in the direction of the foregate and nodded unhappily.
"I only see some of the Trollocs, but they are coming this way. Running. Rand, I really don't think..."
Celine cut him off.
"If he wants to go in, Alantin, he needs a door, such as that one."
She pointed to a dark patch a little down the wall. Even with her telling him, Rand was not certain it was a door, but when she strode to it and pulled, it opened.
"Rand,"
Loyal began. Rand pushed him to the door.
"Later, Loyal, and softly. We're hiding, remember?"
He got them inside and closed the door behind them. There were brackets for a bar, but no bar to be seen. It would not stop anyone, but maybe the Trollocs would hesitate to come inside the walls. They were in an alleyway leading up the hill between two long, low, windowless buildings. At first he thought they were stone too, but then he realized the white plaster had been laid over wood. It was dark enough now for the moon reflecting from the walls to give a semblance of light.
"Better to be arrested by the Illuminators than taken by Trollocs," he murmured, starting up the hill.
"But that is what I was trying to tell you,"
Loyal protested.
"I've heard the Illuminators kill intruders. They keep their secrets hard and fast, Rand."
Rand stopped dead and stared back at the door. The Trollocs were still out there. At the worst, humans had to be better to deal with than Trollocs. He might be able to talk the Illuminators into letting them go. Trollocs did not listen before they killed.
"I'm sorry I got you into this, Celine."
"Danger adds a certain something," she said softly, "and so far you handle it well. Shall we see what we find?"
She brushed past him up the alleyway. Rand followed, the spicy smell of her filling his nostrils. Atop the hill, the alleyway opened onto a wide expanse of smoothly flattened clay, almost as pale as the plaster,
and nearly surrounded by more white, windowless buildings, with the shadows of narrow alleys between. But to Rand's right stood one building with windows, light falling onto the pale clay. He pulled back into the shadows of the alley as a man and a woman appeared, walking slowly across the open space. Their clothes were certainly not Kyrianon. The man wore breeches as baggy as his shirt sleeves, both in a soft yellow, with embroidery on the legs of his breeches and across the chest of his shirt. The woman's dress, worked elaborately across the breast, seemed pale green, and her hair was done in a multitude of short braids. "All is in readiness, you say?" the woman demanded. "You are certain, Tammuz, all." The man spread his hands. "Always your check behind me, Aludra. All is in readiness. The display, it could be given this very moment. The gates and doors, they are all barred. All of the..." Her voice faded as they moved on to the far end of the lighted building. Rand studied the open area, recognizing almost nothing. In the middle of it, several dozen upright tubes, each nearly as tall as he and a foot or more across, sat on large wooden bases. From each tube, a dark, twisted cord ran across the ground and behind a low wall, perhaps 3 paces long, on the far side. All around the open space stood a welter of wooden racks with troughs and tubes and forked sticks and a score of other things. All the fireworks he had ever seen could be held in one hand, and that was as much as he knew, except that they burst with a great roar or whizzed along the ground in spirals of sparks, or sometimes shot into the air. They always came with warnings from the illuminators that opening one could cause it to go off. In any case, fireworks were too expensive for the village council to have allowed anybody unskilled to open one. He could well remember the time when Matt had tried to do just that. It was nearly a week before anyone but Matt's own mother would speak to him. The only thing that Rand found familiar at all was the cords, the fuses. That, he knew, was where you set the fire. With a glance back at the unbarred door, he motioned the others to follow and started around the tubes. If they were going to find a place to hide, he wanted to be as far from that door as he could. It meant making their way between the racks, and Rand held his breath every time he brushed against one. The things in them shifted with the slightest touch, rattling. All of them seemed to be made of wood, without a piece of metal. He could imagine the racket if one were knocked over. He eyed the tall tubes warily, remembering the bang made by one the size of his finger. If those were fireworks, he did not want to be this close to them. Loyal muttered to himself continually, especially when he bumped one of the racks, then started back so fast he bumped another. The Ogier crept along in a cloud of clatters and muttering. Selene was no less unnerving. She strode as casually as if they were on a city street. She did not bump anything, did not make a sound, but she also made no effort to keep the cloak closed. The white of her dress seemed brighter than all the walls together. He peered at the lighted windows, waiting for someone to appear. All it would take was one. Selene could not fail to be seen, the alarm given. The windows remained empty, though. Rand was just breathing a sigh of relief as they approached the low wall, and the alleys and buildings behind it, when Loyal brushed against another rack, standing right beside the wall. It held 10 soft-looking sticks, as long as Rand's arm, with thin streams of smoke rising from their tips. The rack made hardly a sound when it fell, the smoldering sticks sprawling across one of the fuses. With a crackling hiss, the fuse burst into flame, and the flame raced toward one of the tall tubes. Rand goggled for an instant, then he tried to whisper a shout. "Behind the wall!" Selene made an angry noise when he bore her to the ground behind the wall, but he did not care. He tried to spread himself over her protectively as Loyal crowded beside them. Waiting for the tube to burst, he wondered if there would be anything left of the wall. There was a hollow thump that he felt through the ground as much as heard. Cautiously, he lifted himself off of Selene enough to peer around the edge of the wall. She fisted him in the ribs hard and wriggled out from under him with an oath in a language he did not recognize, but he was beyond noticing. A trickle of smoke was leaking from the top of one of the tubes. That was all. He shook his head wonderingly. If that's all there is to it. With a crash like thunder, a huge flower of red and white bloomed high in the now dark sky, then slowly began drifting away in sparkles. As he goggled at it, the lighted building erupted with noise. Shouting men and women filled the windows, staring and pointing. Rand longingly eyed the dark alleyway, only a dozen steps away, and the first step would be in full view of the people at the windows. Pounding feet poured from the building. He pressed Loyal and Celine back against the wall, hoping they looked like just another shadow.
"Be still and be silent," he whispered. "It's our only hope."
"Sometimes," Celine said quietly, "if you are very still, no one can see you at all." She did not sound the least bit worried. Boots thumped back and forth on the other side of the wall, and voices were raised in anger, especially the one Rand recognized as Aludra.
"You great buffoon, Tammuz! You great pig, you! Your mother, she was a goat, Tammuz! One day you will kill us all!"
"I am not to blame for this, Aludra," the man protested. "I have been sure to put everything where it belonged, and the punks, they were—" "You will not speak to me, Tammuz. A great pig does not deserve to speak like a human."
Aludra's voice changed in answer to another man's question. "There is no time to prepare another. Galdrian, he must be satisfied with the rest for tonight. And one early.
And you, Tammuz, you will set everything right, and tomorrow you will leave with the carts to buy them a newer.
Does anything else go wrong this night? I will not trust you again, even with so much as the manure."
Footsteps faded back toward the building to the accompaniment of Aludra's muttering. Tammuz remained growling under his breath about the unfairness of it all. Rand stopped breathing as the man came over to right the toppled stand. Pressed back in the shadows against the wall, he could see Tammuz's back and shoulder. All the man had to do was turn his head, and he could not miss seeing Rand and the others. Still complaining to himself, Tammuz arranged the smoldering sticks in the stand, then stalked off toward the building where everyone else had gone. Letting his breath go, Rand took a quick look after the man, then pulled back into the shadows. A few people still stood at the windows.
"We can't expect any more luck tonight," he whispered.
"It is said great men make their own luck," Celine said softly.
"Will you stop that?" he told her wearily.
He wished the smell of her did not fill his head so. It made it hard to think clearly. He could remember the feel of her body when he pushed her down. Softness and firmness in a disturbing blend. And that did not help either.
"Rand?"
Loyal was peering around the end of the wall, away from the lighted building.
"I think we need some more luck, Rand."
Rand shifted to look over the Ogier's shoulder. Beyond open space, in the alleyway that led to the barless door, three Trollocs were peering cautiously out of the shadows toward the lighted windows. One woman was standing at a window. She did not seem to see the Trollocs.
"So," Celine said quietly, "it becomes a trap. These people may kill you if they take you. The Trollocs surely will. But perhaps you can slay the Trollocs too quickly for them to make any outcry. Perhaps you can stop the people from killing you to preserve their little secrets. You may not want greatness, but it will take a great man to do these things."
"You don't have to sound happy about it," Rand said.
He tried to stop thinking about how she smelled, how she felt, and the void almost surrounded him. He shook it away. The Trollocs did not seem to have located them yet. He settled back, staring at the nearest dark alleyway. Once they made a move toward it, the Trollocs would surely see, and so would the woman at the window. It would be a race as to whether Trollocs or Illuminators reached them first.
"Your greatness will make me happy."
Despite the words, Celine sounded angry.
"Perhaps I should leave you to find your own way for a time. If you'll not take greatness when it is in your grasp, perhaps you deserve to die."
Rand refused to look at her.
"Loyal, can you see if there's another door down that alley?"
The Ogier shook his head.
"There is too much light here and too much dark there. If I were in the alley, yes."
Rand fingered the hilt of his sword.
"Take Celine. As soon as you see a door, if you do, call out, and I'll follow."
If there isn't a door at the end, you will have to lift her so she can reach the top of the wall and climb over.
All right, Rand.
Loyal sounded worried.
But when we move, those Trollocs will come after us no matter who is watching. Even if there is a door, they will be on our heels.
You let me worry about the Trollocs. Three of them. I might do it with the Void. The thought of Saidin decided him. Too many strange things had happened when he let the male half of the true source come close. I will follow as soon as I can. Go! He turned to peer around the wall at the Trollocs. From the corner of his eye, he had an impression of Loyal's bulk moving, of Celine's white dress half covered by his cloak. One of the Trollocs beyond the tubes pointed to them excitedly. But still the three hesitated, glancing up at the window where the woman still watched. Three of them. There has to be a way. Not the Void. Not Saidin.
There is a door,
came Loyal's soft call. One of the Trollocs took a step out of the shadows, and the others followed, gathering themselves. As from a distance, Rand heard the woman at the window cry out, and Loyal shouted something. Without thinking, Rand was on his feet. He had to stop the Trollocs somehow, or they would run him down, and Loyal and Celine. He snatched one of the smoldering sticks and hurled himself at the nearest tube. It tilted, starting to fall over, and he caught the square wooden base. The tube pointed straight at the Trollocs. They slowed uncertainly. The woman at the window screamed, and Rand touched the smoking end of the stick to the fuse, right where it joined the tube. The hollow thump came immediately, and the thick wooden base slammed against him, knocking him down. A roar like a thunderclap broke the night, and a blinding burst of light tore away the dark. Blinking, Rand staggered to his feet, coughing in thick, acrid smoke, ears ringing. He stared in amazement. Half the tubes and all of the racks lay on their sides, and one corner of the building beside which the Trollocs had stood was simply gone, flames licking at the ends of planks and rafters. Of the Trollocs, there was no sign. Through the ringing in his ears, Rand heard shouts from the illuminators in the building. He broke into a tottering run, lumbered into the alley. Halfway down it, he stumbled over something and realized it was his cloak. He snatched it up without pausing. Behind him, the cries of the illuminators filled the night. Loyal was bouncing impatiently on his feet beside the open door, and he was alone. Where is Celine? Rand demanded.
She went back, Rand. I tried to grab her, and she slipped right out of my hands.
Rand turned back toward the noise. Through the incessant sound in his ears, some of the shouts were barely distinguishable. There was light there now, from the flames.
The sand buckets! Fetch the sand buckets quickly!
This is disaster, disaster.
Some of them went that way.
Loyal grabbed Rand's shoulder.
You cannot help her, Rand. Not by being taken yourself. We must go.
Someone appeared at the end of the alley, a shadow outlined by the glow of flames behind, and pointed toward them.
Come on, Rand.
Rand let himself be pulled out of the door into the darkness. The fire faded behind them until it was only a glow in the night, and the lights of the foregate came closer. Rand almost wished more Trollocs would appear, something he could fight. But there was only the night breeze ruffling the grass.
I tried to stop her,
Loyal said. There was a long silence.
We really couldn't have done anything. They would just have taken us, too.
Rand sighed. I know, Loyal. You did what you could. He walked backwards a few steps, staring at the glow. It seemed less. The illuminators must be putting out the flames. I have to help her somehow. How? Saidin? The power? He shivered. I have to. They went through the foregate by the lighted streets, wrapped in a silence that shut out the gaiety around them. When they entered the defender of the dragon wall, the innkeeper held out his tray with a sealed parchment. Rand took it and stared at the white seal, a crescent moon and stars.
Who left this? When?
An old woman, my lord. Not a quarter of an hour gone. A servant, though she did not say from what house.
Quail smiled as if inviting confidences. Thank you, Rand said, still staring at the seal. The innkeeper watched them go upstairs with a thoughtful look.
Huron took his pipe out of his mouth when Rand and Loyal entered the room. Huron had his short sword and swordbreaker on the table, wiping them with an oily rag.
You are along with the Gleeman, my lord. Is he well?
Rand gave a start.
What?
Tom. Yes, he's... He broke open the seal with his thumb and read.
When I think I know what you are going to do, you do something else. You are a dangerous man. Perhaps it will not be long before we are together again. Think of the horn. Think of the glory. And think of me, for you are always mine.
Again it bore no signature, but the flowing hand itself. Are all women crazy? Rand demanded of the ceiling. Huron shrugged. Rand threw himself into the other chair, the one sized for an ogier. His feet dangled above the floor, but he did not care. He stared at the blanket-covered chest under the edge of Loyal's bed.
Think of the glory.
I wish Ingtar would come.
Chapter 28. A New Thread in the Pattern. Perrin watched the mountains of Kinslayer's Dagger uncomfortably as he rode. The way still slanted upwards and looked as if it would climb forever, though he thought the crest of the pass must not be too much further. To one side of the trail, the land sloped sharply down to a shallow mountain stream, dashing itself to froth over sharp rocks. To the other side, the mountains reared in a series of jagged cliffs, like frozen stone waterfalls. The trail itself ran through fields of boulders, some the size of a man's head, and some as big as a cart. It would take no great skill to hide in that. The wolves said there were people in the mountains. Perrin wondered if they were some of Fane's dark friends. The wolves did not know or care. They only knew the Twisted Ones were somewhere ahead. Still far ahead, though Ingtar had pressed the column hard. Perrin noticed that Una was watching the mountains around them much the way he himself was. Matt, his bow slung across his back, rode with seeming unconcern, juggling three colored balls, yet he looked paler than he had. Varen examined him 2 and 3 times a day now, frowning, and Perrin was sure she had even tried healing at least once, but it made no difference Perrin could see. In any case, she seemed to be more absorbed in something about which she did not speak. Rand, Perrin thought, looking at the Aes Sedai's back. She always rode at the head of the column with Ingtar, and she always wanted them to move even faster than the Shinaran lord would allow.
Somehow she knows about Rand.
Images from the wolves flickered in his head. Stone farmhouses and terraced villages, all beyond the mountain peaks. The wolves saw them no differently than they saw hills or meadows, except with a feeling that they were spoiled land. For a moment he found himself sharing that regret, remembering places the two legs had long since abandoned, remembering the swift rush through the trees, and the hamstringing snap of his jaws as the deer tried to flee, and with an effort, he pushed the wolves out of his head.
These Aes Sedai are going to destroy all of us.
Ingtar let his horse fall back beside Perrin's. Sometimes, to Perrin's eyes, the crescent crest on the Shinaran's helmet looked like a Trolloc's horns. Ingtar said softly,
Tell me again what the wolves said.
I've told you 10 times, Perrin muttered.
Tell me again. Anything I may have missed, anything that will help me find the horn.
Ingtar drew a breath and let it out slowly.
I must find the horn of Valir, Perrin. Tell me again.
There was no need for Perrin to order it in his mind, not after so many repetitions. He droned it out.
Someone or something attacked the Dark Friends in the night and killed those Trollocs we found.
His stomach no longer lurched at that. Ravens and vultures were messy feeders.
The wolves call him, or it, Shadow Killer. I think it was a man, but they wouldn't go close enough to see clearly. They are not afraid of this Shadow Killer. Awe is more like it. They say the Trollocs now follow Shadow Killer, and they say Fane is with them.
Even after so long, the remembered smell of Fane, the feel of the man, made his mouth twist. So the rest of the Dark Friends must be too.
Shadow Killer,
Ingtar murmured. Something of the Dark One. Like a murderall? I have seen things in the Blight that might be called Shadow Killers, but did they see nothing else?
They would not come close to him. It was not a fade. I've told you, they will kill a fade quicker than they will a Trolloc, even if they lose half the pack. Ingtar, the wolves who saw it, passed this to others, then still others before it reached me. I can only tell you what they passed on. And after so many tellings... He let the words die as Uno joined them.
A human in the rocks, the one-eyed man said quietly. This far from the waste, Ingtar said incredulously.
Uno somehow managed to look offended without changing his expression, and Ingtar added,
No, I don't doubt you. I am just surprised.
He flaming wanted me to see him, or I likely wouldn't have.
Uno sounded disgusted at admitting it.
And his bloody face wasn't veiled, so he's not out for killing. But when you see one bloody Yael, there's always more you don't.
Suddenly his eye widened.
Burn me if it doesn't look like he bloody wants more than to be seen.
He pointed. A man had stepped into the way ahead of them. Instantly Massima's lance dropped to a couch, and he dug his heels into his horse, leaping to a dead gallop in three strides. He was not the only one. Four steel points hurtled toward the man on the ground.
Hold! Ingtar shouted. Hold, I said! I'll have the ears of any man who doesn't stop where he stands!
Massima pulled in his horse viciously, sawing the reins. The others also stopped in a cloud of dust not 10 paces from the man, their lances still held steady on the man's chest. He raised a hand to wave away the dust as it drifted toward him. It was the first move he had made. He was a tall man, with skin dark from the sun and red hair cut short except for a tail in the back that hung to his shoulders. From his soft, laced knee-high boots to the cloth wrapped loosely around his neck, his clothes were all in shades of brown and gray that would blend into rock or earth. The end of a shorthorn bow peeked over his shoulder, and a quiver bristled with arrows at his belt at one side. A long knife hung at the other. In his left hand, he gripped a round hide buckler and three short spears, no more than half as long as he was tall, with points fully as long as those of the Shinaran lances.
I have no pipers to play the tune, the man announced with a smile. But if you wish the dance...
He did not change his stance, but Perrin caught a sudden air of readiness.
My name is Urien, of the Two Spires, Sept of the Rain Aiel. I am a Red Shield. Remember me.
Ingtar dismounted and walked forward, removing his helmet. Perrin hesitated only a moment before climbing down to join him. He could not miss the chance to see an Aiel close up. Acting like a black-veiled Aiel. In story after story, Aiel were as deadly and dangerous as Trollocs. Some even said they were all dark friends. But Urien's smile somehow did not look dangerous despite the fact that he seemed poised to leap. His eyes were blue.
He looks like Rand.
Perrin looked around to see that Matt had joined them too.
Maybe Ingtar's right, Matt added quietly. Maybe Rand is an Aiel.
Perrin nodded. But it doesn't change anything.
No, it doesn't.
Matt sounded as if he were talking about something beside what Perrin meant.
We are both far from our homes, Ingtar said to the Aiel, and we, at least, have come for other things than fighting.
Perrin revised his opinion of Urien's smile. The man actually looked disappointed.
As you wish it, Shinaran.
Urien turned to Varen, just getting down off her horse, and made an odd bow, digging the points of his spears into the ground and extending his right hand, palm up. His voice became respectful.
Wise one, my water is yours.
Varen handed her reins to one of the soldiers. She studied the Aiel as she came closer.
Why do you call me that? Do you take me for an Aiel?
No, wise one. But you have the look of those who have made the journey to Rhydian and survived. The years do not touch the wise ones in the same way as other women, or as they touch men.
An excited look appeared on the Aes Sedai's face, but Ingtar spoke impatiently.
We are following Dark Friends and Trollocs, Urien. Have you seen any sign of them?
Trollocs? Here? Urien's eyes brightened. It is one of the signs the prophecies speak of. When the Trollocs come out of the Blight again, we will leave the threefold land and take back our places of old.
There was muttering from the mounted Shinarans.
Urien eyed them with a pride that made him seem to be looking down from a height.
The threefold land? Matt said.
Perrin thought he looked still paler. Not sick, exactly, but as if he had been out of the sun too long.
You call it the waste,
Urien said. To us, it is the threefold land. A shaping stone to make us, a testing ground to prove our worth, and a punishment for the sin.
What sin? Matt asked.
Perrin caught his breath, waiting for the spears in Urien's hand to flash. The Aiel shrugged.
So long ago it was that none remember. The Wise One and the clan chiefs, they will not speak of it.
It must have been a very great sin if they cannot bring themselves to tell us. But the Creator punishes us well.
Trollocs, Ingtar persisted. Have you seen Trollocs?
Urien shook his head. I would have killed them if I had, but I have seen nothing but the rocks and the sky. Ingtar shook his head, losing interest, but Varen spoke, sharp concentration in her voice.
This, Rydion, what is it? Where is it? How are the girls chosen to go?
Urien's face went flat, his eyes hooded.
I cannot speak of it, wise one.
In spite of himself, Perrin's hand gripped his axe. There was that in Urien's voice. Ingtard also set himself, ready to reach for his sword, and there was a stir among the mounted men. But Varen stepped up to the Aiel until she was almost touching his chest and looked up into his face.
I am not a wise one as you know them, Urien, she said insistently. I am Aes Sedai. Tell me what you can say about Rydion.
The man who had been ready to face 20 men now looked as if he wished for an escape from this one plump woman with graying hair.
I can tell you only what is known to all. Rydion lies in the lands of the Genail, the 13th clan. I cannot speak of them except to name them. None may go there save women who wish to become wise ones or men who wish to be clan chiefs. Perhaps the Genail choose among them. I do not know. Many go, few return. And those are marked as what they are, wise ones or clan chiefs. No more can I say, Aes Sedai. No more.
Varen continued to look up at him, pursing her lips. Urien looked at the sky as though he was trying to remember it.
Will you slay me now, Aes Sedai?
She blinked.
What? Will you slay me now? One of the old prophecies says that if ever we fail the Aes Sedai again, they will slay us. I know your power is greater than that of the wise ones.
The Aiel laughed suddenly, mirthlessly. There was a wild light in his eyes.
Bring your lightnings, Aes Sedai. I will dance with them.
The Aiel thought he was going to die, and he was not afraid. Perrin realized his mouth was open and closed it with a snap.
What I would not give, Varen muttered, gazing up at Urien, to have you in the White Tower, or just willing to talk. Oh, be still, man, I won't harm you, unless you mean to harm me with your talk of dancing.
Urien seemed astounded. He looked at the Shinarans, sitting their horses all around, as if he suspected some trick.
You are not a maiden of the spear, he said slowly. How could I strike at a woman who has not wedded the spear? It is forbidden except to save life, and then I would take wounds to avoid it. Why are you here, so far from your own lands? She asked. Why did you come to us? You could have remained in the rocks, and we would never have known you were there.
The Aiel hesitated, and she added,
Tell only what you are willing to say. I do not know what your wise ones do, but I'll not harm you, or try to force you. So the wise ones say, Urien said dryly. Yet even a clan chief must have a strong belly to avoid doing as they want.
He seemed to be picking his words carefully. I search for someone. A man. His eye ran across Perrin, Matt, the Shinarans, dismissing them all. He who comes with the dawn. It is said there will be great signs and portents of his coming. I saw that you were from Shinar by your escort's armor, and you had the look of a wise one, so I thought you might have word of great events, the events that might herald him. A man? Varen's voice was soft, but her eyes were as sharp as daggers. What are these signs? Urien shook his head. It is said we will know them when we hear of them, as we will know him when we see him, for he will be marked. He will come from the west, beyond the spine of the world, but be of our blood. He will go to Rhydian and lead us out to the threefold land. He took a spear in his right hand. Leather and metal creaked as soldiers reached for their swords, and Perrin realized he had taken hold of his axe again, but Varen waved them all to stillness with an irritated look. In the dirt, Urien scraped a circle with his spear point, then drew across it a sinuous line. It is said that under this sign he will conquer. Ingtar frowned at the symbol, no recognition on his face, but Matt muttered something coarsely under his breath, and Perrin felt his mouth go dry. The ancient symbol of the Aes Sedai. Varen scraped the marking away with her foot. I cannot tell you where he is, Urien, she said, and I have heard of no signs or portents to guide you to him. Then I will continue my search. It was not a question, yet Urien waited until she nodded before he eyed the Shinarans proudly, challengingly, then turned his back on them. He walked away smoothly and vanished into the rocks without looking back. Some of the soldiers began muttering. Una said something about crazy bloody Aiel, and Massima growled that they should have left the Aiel for the ravens. We have wasted valuable time, Ingtar announced loudly. We will ride harder to make it up. Yes, Varen said. We must ride harder. Ingtar glanced at her, but the Aes Sedai was staring at the smudged ground where her foot had obliterated the symbol. Dismount, he ordered. Armor on the pack horses. We're inside Kyrian now. We do not want the Kyrianen thinking we have come to fight them. Be quick about it. Matt leaned close to Perrin. Do you think he was talking about Rand? It's crazy, I know, but even Ingtar thinks he's Aiel. I don't know, Perrin said. Everything has been crazy since we got mixed up with Aes Sedai. Softly, as to herself, Varen spoke, still staring at the ground. It must be a part, and yet how? Does the Wheel of Time weave threads into the pattern of which we know nothing? Or does the Dark One touch the pattern again? Perrin felt a chill. Varen looked up at the soldiers removing their armor. Hurry, she commanded, with more snap than Ingtar and Uno combined. We must hurry,